Governor Bullock proposes funding of early childhood education. Good evening, I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cades Carney, and that's our top story tonight on Montana Evening Edition. We'll also tell you how former Governor Brian Schweitzer stands to make a lot of money from the sale of some mining claims.
And in our feature interview, reporter Edward O'Brien profiles three of the five Republican candidates for the U.S. House. Montana is one of only eight states that has not invested in early childhood education, and Governor Steve Bullock wants to change that. Bullock announced today a proposal he will make to the upcoming legislature to provide funding for voluntary preschool for all kids age 4 to 5.
And we can do it by taking dollars, giving it to that local district, and then the local district can contract with Head Start, do it within their own school district, do it with other community organizations, as long as we have a real high-quality program, you know, certified teachers and more or less a curriculum that's accepted and accredited. And I think that it's about time that Montana joins those other 42 states that have made investments.
Research shows that kids who don't get early childhood education are more likely to drop out of high school, get pregnant, or get arrested.
It doesn't just benefit the individual child. It really benefits all of us when we look at you're less likely to end up in jail, less likely to hit the social safety net. And we know that if a child's fallen behind his or her peers before kindergarten, that, you know, if they're not kindergarten ready, they're half as likely to read proficiently by third grade. If you're not reading proficiently by third grade, you're four times more likely to drop out of high school.
The governor made his announcement at a Missoula summit on early childhood education, co-sponsored by the Dennis and Phyllis Washington Foundation and attended by both educators and business leaders from around the state.
Journalist Paul Tuff gave a keynote speech at today's summit. Tuff has written a book called How Children Succeed, and his research has found that IQ is not the best measure of how well children will do, but rather how well they have developed what he calls non-cognitive skills.
Things like grit and curiosity, conscientiousness, self-control, and optimism that matter a whole lot in whether or not children succeed.
Tuff found that children who do poorly on standardized tests but who have well-developed non-cognitive skills will often have better chance of succeeding than children who do well in those tests but lack those skills. His research has also found that children who are exposed to what he calls toxic stress, who, for example, live in violence or chaos, have trouble developing those skills.
It's harder to sit still. It's harder to concentrate. It's harder to deal well with disappointments and setbacks. And so one of the reasons it seems that poverty and that disadvantage in general has such a correlation with bad outcomes in the education system is because of stress, is because of the way that the stress that kids are experiencing is damaging their ability to focus, to deal well, to exhibit all of these character strengths that we now know are important in education.
Tuff says he found an adversity gap between kids who grow up in poverty under toxic stress and kids who grow up in affluent circumstances where their parents protect them too much and don't allow them to fail.
What I think is so important for both schools and parents to do is to help kids deal with those, not by sheltering them or telling them it didn't matter or telling them that we as parents will solve this problem and fix it, but instead saying, you know, it's not the end of the world. Yeah, you didn't win that game. You didn't get that grade. You didn't succeed in whatever you were trying to succeed at, but you can learn from that.
Tuff recommends schools change from emphasizing test scores and focus on developing these non-cognitive skills in students to give them a better chance to succeed.
A rescue team has recovered the bodies of two brothers whose small plane crashed into a mountain near Yellowstone National Park 3 weeks ago. The bodies of 84-year-old Robert Zimmerman of Huntsville, Alabama, and 86-year-old Ward Zimmerman were airlifted off Howell Mountain yesterday after the snowpack was deemed stable enough for the operation. Still, the helicopter was only able to hover above the peak, and the brothers' bodies were lifted out using a long line attached to the helicopter. The brothers' 1963 Mooney M20C crashed after taking off from Cody on May 6th. They planned to fly around Yellowstone before heading to Twin Falls, Idaho. The wreckage was found May 12th, but recovery attempts were delayed because of the avalanche danger. Both men were found in their seats.
German prosecutors say they've opened their own investigation into the death of Darren Deedy, the exchange student from Hamburg shot in Missoula last month. Carson Reno, spokesman from Hamburg prosecutors, said today that German law requires an investigation when a citizen is killed abroad. Reno's office is currently preparing a formal request for the assistance from the U.S. investigators, asking for access to details from their investigation. It will have to be conveyed through the German Justice Ministry and to the U.S. Department of Justice before eventually being passed to local authorities in Montana. Marcus Karma has pleaded not guilty to deliberately killing Didi after the teenager entered his garage. At the German investigation opened on May 5th, raised the possibility that if Karma is acquitted in Montana, he could still face trial in Germany.
The city of Missoula plans a safety and accountability audit to evaluate the way victims of sexual assault are treated from the initial report to prosecution of the case. Mayor John Engen, Detective Captain Mike Coyler, and former Missoula County Commissioner Janet Stevens Donahue announced the audit yesterday, saying it was part of the city's 2013 agreement with the U.S. Department of Justice over complaints about how sexual assault reports were handled in the city. Stevens Donahue is administering the six-month audit, which also will examine the police department's response to sexual assault cases and make any needed suggestions for improvement. Coyler says the audit will include creating focus groups of victims and creating an anonymous survey for victims to provide feedback.
The five Republican candidates for U.S. House are scheduled to debate in Kalispell. Today's debate will include State Senator Elsa Arntzen of Billings, State Senator Matt Rosendale of Glendive, former State Senator Corey Stapleton of Billings, and Drew Turiano of Helena, and former State Senator Ryan Zinke of Whitefish. The debate, hosted by Americans for Prosperity Montana and Glacier County Forum, will begin at 6:30 p.m. at the Red Lion Hotel and is scheduled to run for 2 hours. AFP Montana State Director Joe Bailey will be the moderator, and a panel of media will include journalists from the Daily Interlake, Northern Broadcasting Network, and the Montana Television Network.
The Montana Supreme Court rejected a challenge to the legal sufficiency of proposed language for a ballot initiative in which Charter Communications seeks to lower its tax rate. Yesterday's decision allows supporters of Initiative 172 to resume gathering signatures. They need the signatures of nearly 25,000 registered voters by June 20th in order to place the item on the November ballot. A Teachers and Government Workers Union had sought to have the initiative's wording declared legally defective, arguing the ballot statement does not directly say that Charter is seeking a reduction in tax rate. The MEA-MFT also unsuccessfully challenged whether the initiative seeks to illegally appropriate money. The court said that the Attorney General's sufficiency review doesn't authorize him to withhold a proposed ballot measure that may face a constitutional challenge.
The Montana Attorney General's Office and an immigrant rights group are asking a judge to bypass a trial and decide whether a law approved by voters in 2012 should stand. The law requires Montana officials to check whether a person is legally in the country before providing services from unemployment insurance benefits to state jobs. If not, the state agency must turn over the name of that person to the federal immigration officials. The Montana Immigration Justice Alliance urges the phrase, quote, remains unlawfully in the country, unquote, used in the state law to define a person's status is too broad to fit the complex federal immigration laws and the multiple immigrant classifications. Montana Solicitor General Lawrence Van Dyke said today it is up to the state agencies to adhere to federal immigration laws.
Former Montana Governor Brian Schweitzer is part of a small group of investors seeking roughly $10 million in exchange for allowing a mining company to access an $8 billion silver and copper reserve near the Canada border. The Democrat, who has hinted at a 2016 presidential run, is a director and investor in Optima Incorporated. That business controls mining claims needed by Spokane, Washington-based Mines Management, Inc. to access the proposed Montana Nor mine beneath the Cabinet Mountains wilderness near Libby. A federal judge in April gave permission to condemn Optima's claim so the mine can proceed. The order entitled Optima to just compensation. Schweitzer says $10 million is a, quote, ballpark figure, unquote, of what the claims are worth. Schweitzer left office last year and now serves as chairman of Stillwater Mining Incorporated.
Montana State Prison officials say two inmates who were serving time for deliberate homicide have died of extended illnesses. Prison spokeswoman Linda Moodry says 52-year-old Richard Brian Cash died today at the Deer Lodge Hospital, while 56-year-old Charles Glenn Smith died Tuesday in a prison infirmary in Lewistown. Cash was serving 120 years for the 1991 stabbing death of Deborah Davenport in Billings. He was among a group of state prison inmates who attempted to escape from a private prison in Louisiana in May 1999 while they were housed there to ease overcrowding at the state prison. Smith was sentenced for 80 years in prison for killing his wife, Jody, in December of 2007 at their residence in Hungry Horse. During Smith's sentencing hearing, his attorney said Smith had cancer.
Robert Sally, the last survivor of the Mann Gulch wildfire in Montana that killed 13 firefighters, has died. Sally, 82, died Monday from complications following open-heart surgery. Sally was a 17-year-old smoke jumper, youngest on the crew that parachuted to the 1949 wildfire in Montana's Helena National Forest. They were caught on a mountainside when the fire suddenly blew up, cutting off their escape route. He later gave interviews to Norman McLean for his book, Young Men in Fire, and talked to many firefighting groups about the tragedy.
Montana is celebrating its 75th anniversary of its state's park system this summer, and Governor Steve Bullock is urging residents to go out and explore. At the Capitol on Tuesday, Bullock and Missoula artist Monte Dolak revealed a painting titled Smith River in June. The state commissioned the painting, which will be on display at the Capitol. Proceeds of the sale of prints will benefit the Parks Department. The park system got its start in the mid-1930s when President Theodore Roosevelt transferred the Lewis and Clark Caverns to the state. The system now includes 55 parks and drew over 2 million visits last year, a 5% increase from 2012. Bullock says the parks showcase landmarks, landscapes, Montana histories, and offer a great chance for fun and relax.
Five Republican candidates are vying for Montana's next representative in the U.S. House. That crowded field of congressional hopefuls includes State Senator Matt Rosendale of Glendive, former State Senator Corey Stapleton of Billings, State Senator Ellie Arnson of Billings, Drew Turiano of Helena, and former State Senator Ryan Zinke of Whitefish. We've already provided a profile of Zinke, and that can be found at our website, mtpr.org. Matt Rosendale did not respond to our interview requests, but Edward O'Brien brings us this profile of Stapleton, Arnson, and Turiano.
The three candidates have positioned themselves as the conservative alternatives for Montanans. 58-year-old Elsie Arnson has served in the Montana legislature since 2005. Arnson says it's time for Montana to be served by someone with a unique voice, one she says that mirrors what's really happening in Montana. She emphasizes the importance of local control over local issues.
Currently, I chair transportation in the Senate, and one of the last bills that I offered this last legislative session was a commerce corridor. Now, that commerce corridor could be any mode of transportation, whether it's highway, whether it's rail, whether it's air. But the most important part of that bill was to make sure that the local entities that surrounded that corridor had a seat at the table, because it is about that community. And as I'll say again, politics and that discussion should be local.
Arnson, Turiano, and Stapleton all support the Keystone XL pipeline and say the fact the Obama administration still has made no decision on its future shows a lack of fundamental leadership. 40-year-old Helena real estate developer Drew Turiano.
I believe most conservatives support the plan, the XL pipeline. I think it's a good thing. I think it's going to create thousands of jobs in Montana and the surrounding states and elsewhere here in this country. And it's a good thing. Some environmentalists, I guess, have a problem with it, but they shouldn't really have that much of a problem with it. According to all the studies, I mean, it's the safest way to transport oil, actually. It's safer than trucks. Shouldn't be problematic at all, really.
46-year-old Billings financial advisor Corey Stapleton served in the Montana Senate from 2000 to 2008 before being term limited out. Stapleton sees the ongoing debate over the Keystone as just one part of a bigger problem,
which is the obstructionists of the left on trying to do things that are just sensible, which is use the energy that's available to us so we don't have to go to other continents and other hot spots and whatnot. The global warming, I don't know, what is in 20 or 30 years, the world's temperature's gone up 0.1 of a degree, something like that?
Stapleton says he doesn't know specifically why the planet has historically and continues to warm up and cool down.
I know that they've been doing it since the beginning of time. I think that the prudent thing to do is, you know, continue to have lesser effect on our environment as we move through history, which is what Americans are very good at doing, but not do it in a way that hurts our businesses or is so ideologically driven that it becomes absurd. If we shut down all the coal-fired power plants, if we didn't build any more pipelines, we would become a much weaker nation, and the outcomes to the world would not be good.
The three candidates describe themselves as rock-solid supporters of the Second Amendment and do not support proposals for more extensive background checks. Public school teacher Elsie Arnson says the Sandy Hook school shooting, in which 20 school children and 6 adults were gunned down, did not change her opinion on gun control.
Do you think teachers should be armed?
Teachers need to understand guns. I don't think it's the gun itself that causes the grief. It's the person that's behind the gun. And so we do an awful lot of things with outreach and counseling and that. But I do not believe that an overreaching government saying that it is the gun itself is the problem. It is not. It's the individual.
Would you like to see teachers armed or have the ability to be armed?
I think teachers, just like as they are in any part of the community, needs to have an access to that. Whether it comes onto the campus or not, I'm going to come back to my very first statement. It's local. It is up to that community, and it is up to that local school board and entity to decide that.
The cornerstone of Drew Turiano's campaign is immigration. Turiano says he believes just about any other issue is secondary to that.
If something isn't done about immigration in terms of placing a moratorium on all immigration to America, legal and illegal, because the illegal aliens will eventually get amnesty and become legal also. What happens is going to be the end of the Republican Party in this country. The Republican Party is going to go the way of the Whigs. It'll be the end of conservatism in this country. The fact of the matter is that most immigrants who come to this country and have come into this country are big government people. They're going to support the party of big government, the Democrats. They're not going to support the party of small government, the Republican Party, which will mean the end of the Republican Party in about 5 to 10 years nationally.
Turiano's called for a plan to round up and deport illegal immigrants, a plan he dubbed Operation Wetback, which caused a sharp rebuke from Democrats and Republicans alike, some of whom now describe him as a racist, a label he denies.
I didn't come up with it, actually. It was President Eisenhower who came up with that. That was back in the 1950s. It was a policy that he named and he came up with that deported all illegal immigrants from America and their American-born children as well. And it worked because he deported about 1.4 million illegal immigrants, and others decided to leave because, you know, they knew that they were going to be thrown out.
All of this, I guess, your hardline stance on immigration plus the use of Operation Wetback. Are you a racist? Do you hate and fear ethnic minority?
Oh, no, of course not. Like I said, it was a policy that President Eisenhower came up with, and I support it. And that was never meant to be derogatory or anything. That's the farthest thing from me. I mean, I love all people.
Stapleton, like Turiano and Arnson, opposes gay marriage.
Well, I've actually read several articles on the people who are at the forefront of this, who admittedly would prefer that we get away from that whole concept, i.e., if a lesbian couple wants to have kids, you know, they can raise kids through uncles and friends. And why do we need to have this such this rigid, you know, man and woman standard to raise kids, when in fact now we can just get these kids, you know, however, whether it's through adoption or in vitro, all these different things. I mean, you know, 50 years from now, they'll probably have guys carrying kids if they can. You know, I mean, where do you stop with the absurdity? You know, we'll mandate that women get equal playing time in the NFL. I mean, it's like, come on. We're all equal, right? You know, my experience has been that a child raised by a mother and a father in a loving environment, to which you point out doesn't always happen, should be the ideal, and I support promoting that.
All three describe themselves as pro-life candidates, but Arnson says there should be no exceptions, including in cases of rape and incest.
That would be a horrible, horrible thing to have occur, and even the mother's life in jeopardy with that. So I can only say that I am 100% pro-life. I've felt life. I know what life is.
So it would be a terrible thing to happen, but you would not support abortions for women who have gone through those terrible things?
I wouldn't say that you couldn't support them. Support would mean that, you know, it would come to the family. It would come to anything in healthcare that we could provide, anything in the community that we could provide for those individuals, because that's what it's all about. But when it comes to regulation and things, I think it needs to be up to the individual.
But the act of abortion, still, you would not support in
the cases of rape or incest. I am 100% pro-life.
Okay, so that's a no then. You're nodding your head. Turiano agrees. Stapleton is a pro-life candidate, except for those cases of rape, incest, or a life-threatening condition for a woman. The Republican candidates for the U.S. House are State Senator Matt Rosendale of Glendive, former State Senator Corey Stapleton of Billings, State Senator Elsie Arnson of Billings, Drew Turiano of Helena, and former State Senator Ryan Zinke of Whitefish. We've already provided a profile of Zinke, and that can be found at our website, mtpr.org. Matt Rosendale did not respond to our interview requests. The primary is next Tuesday, June 3rd. For Montana Evening Edition, I'm Edward O'Brien.
And now for tonight's forecast. West of the Divide tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain showers and slight chance of thunderstorms. Lows in the mid-30s to lower 40s. And tomorrow calls for partly cloudy with a chance of rain showers with highs in the 60s. In central Montana, a severe thunderstorm watch is in effect until 10 p.m. this evening for southern Rocky Mountain Front, Cascade Central, and southern Lewis and Clark and Meeker. Tonight, expect mostly cloudy skies, a chance of showers and thunderstorms in the evening, and tomorrow calls for partly cloudy skies, highs 60 to 70. In southwest Montana, a severe thunderstorm watch is in effect till 10 p.m. this evening for Jefferson, Broadwater, and Gallatin. Tonight calls for partly cloudy skies, a slight chance of shower and thunderstorms in the evening, lows 35 to 45. Tomorrow, expect partly cloudy skies, 60 to 70. And now for the editorial comments of Dina Mansour.
Nobel Prize for Literature, John Steinbeck decided that he was out of touch with America. He took his French poodle Charlie on a cross-country road trip, documenting his adventures in his book, Travels with Charlie: In Search of America. Steinbeck wrote rapturously of Montana, saying, "I am in love with Montana. For other states, I have admiration, respect, recognition, even some affection, but with Montana, it is love. Montana has a spell on me. It is grandeur and warmth. Of all the states, it is my favorite and my love." Of course, for all of us who live here, such depth of emotion comes as no surprise. Every day, as we wake up to the mountains and enjoy the companionship of our neighbors, we know how lucky we are to be here. And when foreigners imagine America, visions of our big sky country inevitably come to mind. The American West is integral in defining our national character. Montana exemplifies our adventure, independence, and egalitarian spirit. The U.S. Department of State has recognized what we have to offer as a state. Over the past 5 years, the Maureen and Mike Mansfield Center of the University of Montana has successfully competed for numerous grants from the Department of State's Educational and Cultural Affairs Bureau. Projects designed to promote mutual understanding, leadership, and professional development. Importantly for our listeners tonight, these federally funded grants have touched communities around our state. High school and university students, teachers, economic development professionals, sports educators, and community leaders have had the opportunity to travel overseas on these educational exchanges. Countless other citizens have hosted international visitors in their homes, offices, and communities. Most recently, the Mansfield Center has been awarded a grant to host 20 high school teachers from around the world. The program is called the Study of the U.S. Institute, American Studies Through the Lens of Democracy and Citizenship. Today, 20 teachers of English and American Studies will arrive to spend a month in Montana, visiting from such countries as Iraq and Afghanistan, Uganda and Cote d'Ivoire, Mongolia and China, Finland and Lithuania, and Panama and Paraguay. Each scholar will come with individual perceptions of the U.S., largely shaped by such influences as the media and their own advanced studies in textbooks in classrooms far removed from the United States. The Institute provides an introduction to American government and politics to create a strong foundation for understanding U.S. culture and society. We examine the ideas that informed the creation and development of our political system, how that system has developed over time, and consider some of the major contemporary challenges facing American democracy. Our program emphasizes the importance of thinking critically across disciplines and to debate difficult questions while we seek to define American culture and society. However, it's the people-to-people engagement that will truly define the scholars' perceptions of America. We hope you'll see them around over the next month as their program takes them into local schools, government offices, and businesses, to downtown tonight and Saturday markets, up to the M and rafting down the Clark Fork, and dining and shopping on the local economy. It's engagement with people like you that will make the biggest impact on what they think of the United States. And if what we've seen with our other visitors holds true, they'll leave Missoula knowing that Montanans are kind, generous, and warm people. It's because of people like you that we've been so successful in attracting global projects to our state. And for that, we're grateful to you. We are honored to bring such projects to Montana in the spirit of our namesake, Senator Mike Mansfield. Rising from working Butte copper mines and service in three military branches to lead the U.S. Senate and serve as our nation's ambassador to Japan, Mansfield left enduring marks on Montana, the U.S., and international diplomacy, and was respected for his wisdom, integrity, and leadership. While his primary regional focus was Asia, Mansfield valued global understanding. As a result, our programs are international in scope, with a strong emphasis on integrating cultural context. As we lead these high school teachers in a study of the U.S., Mansfield serves as an apt reminder of the virtues and attributes of our society and culture. One of our visitors from Vietnam commented last week, "I have discovered the corners of the real U.S. with fresh eyes and mind. Living in Montana makes me feel about the world two opposite things. It is very huge and diverse in terms of geography, but very touching in human emotion." Thank you for sharing of yourselves and your community with international visitors, impacting global perceptions one person at a time. On behalf of the Mansfield Center, I'm Dina Mansour.
Dina Mansour is one of several commentators on Montana Evening Edition. Views expressed don't necessarily represent those of this station. If you have a comment, you can send it via our webpage at mtpr.org or on Montana Public Radio's Facebook page. Montana Evening Edition is also archived on our website. I'm Conrad Scheid.
And I'm Corin Cates Carney. Thanks for listening, and please join Edward O'Brien tomorrow at 7, 8, and 8:30 for Montana Morning News.